Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And we have another great show tonight dealing with metaphysics and spirituality and science and, well, just about anything you can think of that is relevant and generic to those particular subjects. And I thought tonight we would talk about spiritual principles of conservation. And a lot of you are going to say, oh, it's like one of those shows where he's talking about things like waste not, want not type of stuff. Yeah, I am. That's right. Yeah, although I don't think I'm going to quite say something that is as prophetic as something as a biblical statement. But waste not, want not is kind of true. And it may be more true today than it has been even in thousands of years before today. Because it turns out, if we really examine ourselves, and this is where I want to show where the nexus of spiritual principles and conservation come together. If we examine ourselves as a world, and especially those of you who are in the United States or are familiar with United States, we have been, in general, as a world, but specifically as the U.S. nation, a non-conserving group of people. Now, what does that mean? Well, that means that we don't take the effort, we don't use our abilities and place them in a position of high priority to conserve or try to use to the maximum extent the we'll call it material existence that we presently are enjoying, or maybe not so much, here in this world. And so the spiritual issue here is that it's like thumbing your nose in the face of a grave responsibility, that we're saying, well, you know, it's a lot easier to just throw things away. It's a lot easier to sometimes to just buy new stuff, to not be concerned about the amount of time and energy it takes to do something, to maybe even not be concerned about time in general, by the way. And that has some significant ramifications because it goes against the interest of souls, human souls, and other souls of other things who want to learn the most they can about how to manage time and energy in the most difficult place to do it in, which is the dimension of time and space we live in right now, the physical world. So we came here with that purpose in mind, and then, sure enough, you live in the U.S. in the throwaway economy, and we threw our economy away, we're in the midst of a catastrophe, and we don't even concern ourselves with it. Now, I'm not talking about the Gulf right now. Some of you may have your mind may have wandered to that. That isn't what I'm referring to. I mean, sure, that's a problem. There's no question about it. In our present administration, the president decided that he would save our fleets and energies of cleaning up the oil immediately for a second or a third, possibly, catastrophe. He doesn't want to use everything at once. I'm not kidding you. This was on the internet yesterday. I was very surprised. Well, that's another crazy idea. But right now I'm talking about each individual not paying attention to the bigger picture. Now, I know some of you are going to say, and I've been in contact with a few of you out there, and you say, well, I put the bins out, and I try to recycle stuff, and I got CFLs now, and that's the light bulbs, the little curly Q light bulbs many of you are familiar with, and I'm doing everything I think that I'm supposed to be doing, right? So what are you on my case about? Well, there's a heck of a lot more to do than that. I appreciate, by the way, the people who are doing those things, because it's a step in the right direction, but it's the first step of a very long journey. in learning how to use your time and energy in ways that are, that produce the most meaning in your life, while it also contributes to everyone else's life's meanings, and it preserves this part of the universe. Because, you see, human beings are in the unique position of actually at a certain point in their development, and we in this planet are really at this point right now, right at that critical point of protecting and conserving and developing the lower kingdoms, which they use to build their own civilization. And we've done this in a big way, especially the last couple hundred years in the western parts of the world. This has been done tremendously, but we've done it without the principles of conservation being applied. And so spiritually, we have become lacking. We've become extremely non-spiritual in our use of time and energy. Now, what can we do to make some differences if we're going to really make changes? Well, the odd part about this has to do with a thing called consciousness. That's the part of us that understands things like what I'm talking about and understands the connections of the things we supposedly have knowledge about. So knowledge is not consciousness. Knowledge doesn't help us to connect one piece of knowledge to another. Knowledge is just the ability to say back something that someone supposedly thinks they know, and in some cases they believe to be correct, or some people would say true. But it's not consciousness. And what we're lacking is this consciousness. And you know what consciousness comes from? Is the ability to use all that we have, including our knowledge, to be of some service to others, to give to others in wise ways, that helps them to do the same. That builds consciousness. If you don't do that, let's say you're kind of selfish, and you decide, well, you know, I'm not going to worry about anything else, anybody else. I'll just take care of myself, my immediate family, or whatever. Then you lower your consciousness. And when you lower your consciousness, your ability to be a good conserver diminishes, directly proportionate to your lack of understanding what is going on around you and how things connect together. So it's something, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about, as an anecdotal point, I'm going to tell you a little bit about some of the things that I and those that I associate with are involved in. And I'll give you some idea of the problems and also the things that might be of some help to resolve some of these crises, I call them, that we're bringing on ourselves. At the present time, you know, a group of us, it isn't just myself, I don't want you to think I do these things alone, because I don't believe in that. I believe that we should all work together, and we should encourage others to become as conscious and helpful as we are trying to be ourselves. But let's talk about some of the things that we do. Well, some of the stuff we do is to try to find solutions for the problems in our world today, which are, interestingly, almost entirely based upon non-spiritually applied principles of conservation. Honestly, most of the problems that we deal with go right back to this specific issue of time and energy being inappropriately used. We have, as an example, developed methods, ways to try to overcome desertification. Now, what is that? That's a big word, huh? It just means that whether you believe in global warming or you don't, it's a fact that people are losing their arable lands because of a lack of consistent and useful water. And as this takes place, the ability to live is diminished, life itself. if it continues for another 10 to 20 years at the present rate, over a billion people are probably going to perish. And that's a terrible outcome, if you think about it. Cause everybody's worried about what if a big rock comes from the sky or if we have a terrible disease. Yeah, that could kill a billion people, too. But this is something that is progressing, and it's right under our noses, and nobody seems to understand it. Why? Because there's a lack of consciousness. People are not conscious of it. It isn't a lack of knowledge. I mean, you can go to the internet and type in that word, desertification, and you'll get all kinds of information about it. And you'll find the information that I gave you is correct, except it's probably a little lower, what I said, than the actual number they might tell you on the internet. So it's like 1.25 billion or at risk or so. But the point is that the facts are there, but the consciousness, putting the facts together, is not. And you might say, well, what about awareness? Well, some people are unaware, too. If you don't have awareness, you certainly aren't going to have consciousness. But believe it or not, people have a lot of awareness for the things that they want to have awareness of. And if you remember at the beginning of the show, I said spiritual principles that are defined are done so because people don't care to apply their awareness, not because they can't. So in other words, the real problem here isn't because, well, gee, we've got some kind of damaged senses in everybody and they just can't figure the thing out. No, they use their senses for many things that are of far less importance. Okay, so we do things like that. We have come up with a plan that would reverse 90-95% of all desertification in the world. And we're experimenting with it. There's some evil people who are trying to stop us, by the way. You've heard me talk about that. If you would like to help us deal with those evil people, hey, give us a call. Thank you for those who have already done so. We need the help. But anyway, let's get on subject here. So we've got that is an issue, and we work on that. Then we also work on, I know this sounds too big to almost believe, we also work on the amount of energy that people use in their daily lives and how much they expend in finances and time in trying to deal with the costs and the terrible consequences of running out of energy, as well as, unfortunately, supposedly, and at times maybe factually, doing some destruction to the environment. Now, the destruction to the environment has not been as bad as it could have been, because there's a thing called solar minimus. You remember I had a show or two about that? And so the sun has been cooperating until last month, and the sunspot activity has been 4 years late in coming, but it started last month. Now that has some severe consequences because it's going to warm things up considerably. So we've had some of the coldest last few years in the last decades of time. It's gotten cooler. But now, watch out. All right. But I want to make this point that I'm not trying to convince people that there's solar warming or there's this or that. I'm trying to help people to become conscious so they can figure this out for themselves. And they don't need me or somebody else telling them otherwise. And I'm not even convinced myself that our problem is purely based upon human development in terms of solar warming. There are other many complicated factors. I am positive of desertification because that has documented and clear evidence. The solar warming has been fudged and strained and changed so that it's hard to muddle through it right now because there's political people who want one thing or another, to use it as a weapon, and that's a crazy thing. If you're a scientist and you've done something like that and you're listening to the show, shame on you. I mean, I really think that you don't help anybody by fudging data and lying about what you think is the truth. Okay, so we work on that side. We try to get people to understand different ways to conserve energy and to live a life that is more interesting in some ways and that is reasonably, if not completely, as comfortable as it is for them at the present time. It doesn't mean they don't have to put out some extra energy and maybe a little bit more money under some circumstances in order to lead a spiritually conservative life. But the important element here is that it is not, most of the time, neither more difficult nor more expensive to do many of the things that we help people to do. And you've heard me talk about some of these things. I'm not going to go into all of those things tonight because I wouldn't have time to talk about the bigger picture, which is what I'm really dealing with tonight. But part of tonight's show is to bring to people's awareness and then to build it into their consciousness that we can do something that's very significant to make a difference. And, you know, we as a group, the people that I'm spiritually associated with, sent out to all the departments that are relevant in our government the first month that we're open in this administration, and to the president and his people who work with him, a very large package. I mean, seriously, giving them answers to a whole bunch of conservation issues. Other than, I think his name is Stephen Chu, Professor Chu, he's the Department of Energy. He took some of those things without giving us credit and used them. We know because some of them were proprietary and we have invented them. He didn't maybe know that, but he, in a speech he gave, we heard him talking about it. But and I guess maybe, you know, we don't have to have credit for it, but it would be helpful because then more people might listen to us and we can help them more. But at any rate, other than that and a couple of letters we got back, we got some responses, but nothing really moved the administration towards a policy that was correct. Instead, everything became politically driven. They recommended literally certain kinds of windows that one of the people that worked for the Obama administration, his husband, works for this particular window company, and amazingly, they go to that particular window company and give them like a giant commercial. I mean, silly things like that, which really, again, the greed and the self-focused behavior only demolished the whole plan and idea of spiritual principles. And so people then condemn conservation because people who are supposedly doing it for altruistic reasons are actually greedy and corrupt. That doesn't help. It doesn't help at all. So here's an administration that claims one of their hallmarks was to push conservation, and they've done the opposite. They've had more of a negative impact on it because of a number of decisions. There's a whole bunch of them. I don't want to go through every one. And it has produced a fortunate consequences. Now, we're trying, a group, are trying to overcome this, but there's been an inertia created following just really selfish decisions. So one of the things that would be helpful for everyone out there is to try to overcome some of this inertia, some of this negativism, because of corruption and other things, and the groping for power. Cap and trade is just a way to get power and more control. It's a way to take over even further the country itself. So we're not cap and traders at all. I think it's a terrible way to go. Of course, you've heard me say so before. Free markets and giving people the ability to develop their consciousness so they can understand the truth and decide what they want to do that is best for not only them but everybody else, and they make it as a collective decision. And then the market decides what is good and what is bad instead of some turkey sitting as it calls himself a blank czar and decides how we're going to do what we're going to do. Like, they really understand this stuff, you know. They don't. They couldn't because they're too selfish. Their reasons for doing what they're doing are corrupt. And then you can't be very conscious. So all of you that are listening hopefully can do better. We need to collectively get together. We need to start building networks of conserving and finding and using those things that are working by communicating them. Some of you who are the most bold and experimental, try on some of the things that we suggest our group by contacting us. We'll tell you what to do. If you live in the state of Arizona, we can actually do it with you and for you. But if you live out of the state, we'll tell you what to do or how to do it, and maybe even give you some names of people that might be helpful. But the point is that we need to be doing this now, because, you see, this particular time, the reason we have Nero sitting in the White House fiddling his fiddle while the oil is going out and closing all the oil wells that aren't obviously broken is because he wants us to have an energy crisis, and we're headed for one. One of such unbelievable proportions that people are going to be so frightened, they'll go along with cap and trade or anything else. Well, heck, they'll probably give their firstborn. You never know. But you see, what's happening here is we're being set up. And the way to stop this is for us to do something right now to conserve energy so that no matter what these turkeys say or do, they won't be able to twist our arms to the point where we give up. Now, some of you won't, but I think the majority of people will. And that could lead to a very, very more significant problem than just energy conservation. How about totalitarianism? And how about giving up your freedoms and rights? You out there, unless you're very old, don't know what I'm talking about. Or if unless you came from a country where you experienced it other than the U.S. Okay, so if we can conserve, we can protect ourselves and everyone else from the greedy, the corrupt, the power-hungry. And at the same time, we'll give ourselves time to develop alternative energy models. There is not enough time, believe me. I know this, but you're going to have to find out for yourselves if you don't believe me. There's not enough time to develop any significant energy model that would make any difference to the outcome of the present situation. There's not enough time to build even nuclear power plants, if that's something you believe will work. Not enough time. About 10 to 15 years to build a nuclear power plant and get it online. Well, you may not have known that. What about, what about solar? Everybody wants to hang out a solar collector. I know. But solar collectors are 10 times too expensive installed than what the cost needs to be to make sense. Now you could say, well, but Obama said that the rates are going to skyrocket because he wants them to. Well, I know he said that. But the point is that even if they double the rates, solar won't make it. It's not. It won't produce enough reliable energy. And then the storage issues are tremendous problems because the sun doesn't shine all the time. So what other answers do we have? Well, first of all, the first thing is to not use so much energy. I mean, I tell you this right now, and it's going to be hard to believe, but the average person in the United States has the capability to use one half of all the energy they consume on a daily basis and live not much differently than they presently do. As a matter of fact, in some cases, they may think, and they may be right, that they're living actually better. That means half of the energy it takes to go from one place to another. Part of that's based upon planning. Part of it's based upon changing what kind of vehicle and or your vehicle itself. There are ways things you can do to improve the mileage and conserve energy. But the way you drive also and the planning of trips has a tremendous amount to do with wasted energy. I mean, if you constantly only drive in heavy traffic, that's going to use a lot more energy. The things to do and consider how you may avoid at least some of the times when that happens. There are other way more things than that. And then, in terms of transportation, but also consider this. Most people's homes, whether it's an apartment, and I know you could say, well, apartment, I can't take the apartment. Though there's things you could even do in an apartment, believe it or not. It doesn't cost very much. That will conserve energy, especially if you're paying the bill. But even if you're not paying the bill, who cares? I mean, ultimately, someone's paying that bill, and you're paying it in your rent anyway. But the energy that we consume within our homes is, depending upon the area you live in, to a large extent, controlled by the weather. And it's also controlled by whether or not we are prepared when we experience cold or hot or humid conditions to be able to live in a way that those things do not adversely affect us from the outside to the in. And there are so many simple ways of conserving energy that don't cost all that much. Some that you can do yourself, others that you can get some help with, and that are cost-effective. They pay for themselves over a reasonable period of time so that you're way ahead of the game. And, of course, once you do it, it's forever. And people aren't selling as many houses now, so you can't say, well, I'm flipping my house over a year and a half, so I don't care. No, you're not flipping your house over a year and a half, not in today's world. Be lucky to flip it every decade and a half if things continue. So, I mean, really, this is a time, more than a couple of years ago, when I first broached this subject, that people should be very much concerned about this. Your energy bills may exceed your mortgage in a couple more years. They're putting all kinds of added fees and rate hikes with extra rates, like, oh, it's July. Well, that's the reason your bill went up. It'll go down by September. But when it's hot in July, you're going to pay a lot more because you're going to be too hot otherwise. Yeah, they're doing that. They're doing that where I am. And they may not be doing it where you are because maybe July's a nice cozy month. Maybe you live in Alaska. July isn't so bad. You know. But then how's your January? You know, if you look at the circumstances that we presently are facing, part of our freedom is going to depend upon us being wise in our conservation. I know it sounds crazy. I mean, you see, a lot of people are probably sitting there like, oh, this guy, really, I think he's flipped out the last few months. You know, he's saying our freedom is dependent upon conservation. Well, I think it is, because that's the hammer they've been waiting and holding back on. Healthcare was just the encore. It's not even going to make a difference because it won't even go into effect before this president is either out of office or impeached or whatever they're going to do with him. What's really going to make a difference is energy. And that's why the oil spill is not being dealt with properly. That's the big chip. Everybody thinks the president and his crew are crazy because he's going to be voted out. Well, maybe. But if energy doubles in price in the next 6 months or a year, which is what's going to happen, people are going to be so terrified of not being able to even stay warm or cool or go to any place because they don't have enough fuel because they'll be rationing, that they're not going to be maybe so concerned about those freedoms as they close down the internet and tax it and control it and track everybody and determine who's doing what when on it. So, see, that's part of the problem, is that we haven't been looking in all the directions that we need to be looking at. Yeah, politics is real important. And certainly, I would put a lot of energy and time into trying to correct the present political situation. We've got to get rid of the corruption. Limited terms are an answer. Think about that. But in the meantime, conservation becomes a critical element just in survival, but and also as a collective, as a country and a world. If we don't conserve almost immediately, our lives are going to become hell. And we don't even know it. Because our consciousness has not reached a level to see all the connections and realize what's coming. And this is troubling to me, because I'm jumping up and down, as I usually do. It's like, can't you get it? You don't understand. And they don't understand. And so I'm doing it tonight. I'm letting you know, straight up, that things are going to get a lot tougher. And yes, it's about that metaphysical stuff about the third ray changing or the fourth and all that. I can bring that in if you want. You've heard it from me before if you listen to the show. But I don't have to get that metaphysical with you. I mean, I can talk about this with almost not bringing up a single metaphysical point. I can use just the mundane side of existence and show where we're headed. And that means that we're way past the point of talking about esoteric matters. Esoteric means hidden. Well, it just isn't hidden anymore. I mean, what's happening is a design, and it's a design to remove control from all elements of life. And it's happening somewhat worldwide, but it's by far more happening right here in the U.S., for those of you who are in the U.S. Now, I know I have a number of listeners from out of the country, but, you know, you guys maybe should let us know, for those of you who know better. I know that Germany is going in a different direction for the first time in a long time. They're starting to talk about all kinds of stuff, like conservation. The German Prime Minister, she met with the President, and this is this week, and she was, this is not to disparage her, I just don't remember her name at the moment, and the conversation went something like this. Well, we're going to cut back on expenditures. And we're going to cut back on the use of energy. And we're going to conserve as much as we possibly can. And you know what Obama said? Well, we're going to spend ourselves crazy. I want you to double your spending. And she just left him. She said, no, we're cutting it in half. Someone knows something right. Now, maybe she's wrong. But I don't think so. I think she's more right than probably anyone in the Obama administration is at this point. Now, again, they may know better, but their ulterior motives are to gain power and control, not to and to do so through intimidation, fear, whatever they can use, but not necessarily to do what they say they're doing, which is, well, we really want alternative energy to save our world. But that's going to destroy the world because there is no alternative energy that could be implemented within any reasonable time that would change the present circumstances. Nothing. Here's an interesting thought. About 6 months ago, a fairly well-known scientist decided to calculate the total amount of drag on the Earth's rotation if more than half of our energy, which is a tremendous amount, by the way, came from wind power. I mean, in other words, if you put up huge windmills on all the oceans and every place else, and you try to get a lot of energy from wind, what would happen? And it turns out it would destroy the world because it would act as such a drag on the planet that it would start slowing down our rotational, angular momentum or rotation of the planet, and we'd die. Create unbelievably terrible catastrophes of a magnitude that you can't even conceive. Now, I mean, does that make sense? That, you know, everybody says, well, just put up some windmills. I mean, they had them in the 15th century, you know. Yeah, but they didn't drag the Earth to a stop. They made maybe a few kilowatts of power with it. They didn't make terawatts, which is what they would need, hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of terawatts of power. And that's beyond our comprehension, to replace the amount of energy that we use from coal and gas and oil. And what about nuclear? Well, France went nuclear. 80-some-odd% of their power comes from nuclear power plants. But they still don't know how really to handle the waste very well. That is a problem. And with our present regulations, it would take 10 to 15 years to get a significant number of them online. Now, they could try to shortcut that, but I don't think this administration would do that. So we would end up with a totally, you know, non-response from that. So there really aren't a lot of solutions out there. I like Pickens, T. Boone Pickens. I like his idea, and it's something to consider. I really do. I think that he's on to something about going to natural gas. It's like a step in the right direction for some things, like trucks, et cetera, and use that as a support system. It's even cheaper than oil presently is. As long as oil's over $70 a barrel, which it is, it's either break-even or cheaper. So that's probably a good way to go. And it's something to consider. We can talk more about that when we come back, because we're going to go to break here. But I want you to think about this, that conservation is not some kind of optional fun thing just to do on the weekends because, hey, you can claim you're a green person. It may be the only thing that's going to save our butts. And I want you to think about that in terms of yourself, your friends, your neighbors. Okay. We'll be back in about 2 minutes and 30 seconds from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower, M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we're talking about spiritual principles of conservation. It's a mouthful, I guess, of words. And it's important, I guess, to me that as much as I can convey it, there is a connection between conserving and all elements of conservation and us staying free and having meaningful existences while we live here in the physical dimension. And it's, and I'm saying everything with the caveat of life in the physical world, because if, again, this is more metaphysical than anything else, but if you go on, and when you go on, I shouldn't say if, but when you go on and live in a more complex dimension of time and space, such as the astral, some people call it that, dimension, conservation is no longer as relevant an issue. Because the ability to control energy with thought itself is so much higher because of a thing called the quantum constant change, that or Planck's constant. Some people may know it by that name. It doesn't seem to matter anymore. Well, then literally, your consciousness itself and your awareness directly controls energy. And so you don't have this in-between part about using energy itself to change energy. So because thought itself becomes the instrument. So then you're only limited by your own ability to think. And so that's a different kind of conservation, we'll say. I think we may have a caller on the line. Hello.
Hello. You have a caller. It's Herb Lubitz calling from Wilmington, Delaware. How are you?
Hi, Herb. How are you doing? Good to
Very
hear
good.
From you. What's up?
Listening to your recommendations about conservation, and you mentioned, what's his name? Thibaut Pickens, about natural gas.
Yeah.
As a substitute for transportation uses, mainly trucks and so forth.
Because
you have to use special places for dispensing the gas. What I don't understand is why we don't set up a system for polymerizing methane, which is natural gas, polymerizing
right.
it to butane, which is a liquid, can be dispensed as essentially would be gasoline. You can use existing infrastructure for dispensing it. And as you know, gas has been discovered in huge quantities in this country recently, and would make more sense than the idea of ethanol, which is absolutely ridiculous because it's
crazier than that because
it causes more pollution and it takes more energy to produce that you get out of it. The whole idea is nonsensical. But
if you're using corn,
go ahead.
Go ahead.
DuPont has developed a process in conjunction with BP, of all companies, to convert cellulosics to butanol, which is a liquid and makes more sense than ethanol. But the most sense is you wouldn't have to use agricultural products. You can just use natural gas, polymerize it, which can be done relatively easy and cheaply. For instance, polyethylene, which is, as you know, a film, is essentially polymerized methane. Is what it is. It's a CH molecule, which is polymerized. And I don't understand why that has not been Excuse me?
I'm familiar with the process, but can you, for the sake of the listeners, explain about how much, or if you know, because I know your background, but they don't know that, and you're an engineer, of course. And so what would the cost be per gallon, say, on a large scale, to do this process and to create butane out of methane?
Methane, yeah. All you have to do is develop a catalyst, and essentially it would be a continuous process. Should not be that expensive. Certainly a lot cheaper than producing ethanol. Pardon me?
Well, what catalyst would you use, though? I mean,
that's beyond my pay grade right now. I've been out of the industry for 30 years. But I think it's been done in some places already, or it's been evaluated. But developing catalysts for polymerization of CH, carbon hydrogen polymers, or, CH4 is not a polymer, it's a gas. Ethane is C2H6, which is a gas. Propane propane's a gas as well, yeah. But butane is a liquid, which is C4H10. And I don't think it would be that difficult expensive.
I know that the Nazis during World War II were plagued and faced with issues of conversion, both from coal and other fuels.
Primarily
they never found a catalyst that was efficient enough to make it worthwhile in terms of an economic reason. They did it because they had to, because they forget about the economics. They wanted to run their tanks. But the point is that I don't think they came up with a process that was very effective. Now,
well, that was because you had to convert coal, which is a major problem, but which is not a gas, obviously.
Right. But you can gasify. They gasified coal and then they converted.
Right.
It was a major mess. Yeah.
But that was a major cause of gasification. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I threw that out, and maybe somebody else could pick up on that. And it just seems you have a relatively available material, methane. And polymerization, as you know, is a pretty well-known science. It's been done for the last 40 years, especially of hydrogen chemicals. So I don't know. It's worth pursuing. And maybe people can pick up on it.
Well, I'll tell you what. You send them out an email. I'm serious now. And I'll send them an email, and let's see if we can get somebody to communicate with us about this. Because we're not going to get anywhere if we...
Do you happen to have T. Boone Perkins' email?
I think we do, actually. I don't have it where I'm at in the studio, but I do think we have it. So I'll tell you what, I'll communicate it to you as soon as I can after the show.
Okay.
How's that?
Very good.
Listen, it's great hearing from you again. And also,
some of your friends
gave us a call today, by the way. They want to come out here and work with us. Yeah, Jack, I guess. And
Jack.
Whatever. I can't. Yeah, don't say his name. It's all right.
Okay.
Not over there. But we appreciate everybody that's coming and helping us. We really do. That makes it's fantastic. Thank you very much.
I'd like to join your group, but the distance is a little too far. But maybe one of these days.
Well, I just got to move from the other side of the country. That's all you
right.
got to do.
Well, you could move to the East Coast.
Okay.
Arizona's got too many problems right now.
No, I love those problems. I think it's the greatest thing what we're doing. Okay. Listen, you take care. I'll talk to you later.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye. All right. So I thought that was a very interesting idea. Now, I didn't want to get too much into the chemistry side of it because I'm not even sure I could figure all that out. But even if I could, there is a catalyst problem. And if we could get that catalyst problem solved, maybe it would work. And certainly someone like T. Boone Pickens would probably have the wherewithal to maybe figure that out. And I agree, a liquid fuel, although it still has to be kept under pressure, which is another thing we didn't talk about, because butane cannot be just kept as it is under normal circumstances. But it's easier. It would be easier to control it. and easier to use than methane, which is a gas like you use in your house. I mean, you know, these things can be solved. Where even though they sound complicated when we talk about it, like here on this show, they are not that serious of a problem for people who are qualified engineers and know what the heck they're doing with this, and also chemists. And we have knowledge that's absolutely phenomenal today that even 20, 30 years ago was just in its infancy. There's changes in physics, quantum physics, actually, that now allows scientists to be able to make almost magical things happen in terms of changing from one kind of chemistry to another something. And believe it or not, the Nazis were pretty good. I don't know if I should claim it was the Nazis, the people that they controlled, the scientists they controlled, were pretty good about doing some amazing processes that were fairly complicated, but unfortunately not economically good. I mean, if you didn't run a war, it wouldn't make any sense to be doing it. Although today, we're getting close. Honestly, gas hits $6-$7 a gallon. You could use the Nazi method of gasification of coal and produce gasoline that isn't any more expensive than that. Isn't that amazing? So we're getting closer to the point where it actually could become a reality. I'm hoping that we're not going to get there too soon. It will certainly cause us all to be scrambling to even maintain any kind of standard of living. And in terms of unemployment, we'll see if gasoline goes over $5 a gallon, the unemployment's going to possibly double. That's hard to understand. I mean, when we start thinking about that, it's way beyond on an average across the country, the unemployment rate during the worst part of the Depression, the Great Depression. So things are not looking good. Conservation is the answer. We can nip this thing in the bud. We can do something with it right now and prevent what is the obvious, at least as far as I'm concerned, coming onto us. Let's raise our consciousness now and do something to make a change. Now, Herb's ideas were great, but it would take probably 3 to 5 years at the most favorable circumstances to change the infrastructure to go with either methane or butane, in my opinion. And those kinds of time frames we don't have right now. I know that sounds terrible, but and we should be doing it, by the way, because 5 years from now, obviously, we're going to say, well, why didn't we do it 5 years ago? But certainly we should be thinking about future issues, and that's part of having a higher consciousness. But we need to do things that we can do right now, right now. And the things I know that we can do right now involve conservation. Now, let me talk a little bit about what, more specifically, if you're facing where I think you are, most of you are, that you can be changing. You can do an audit or an energy evaluation of your home. And your home could be an apartment. It could be, I don't care where you're living. And figure out how efficient your home is. If you, as an example, are living in a very hot climate, we've got some great ideas. And that's for staying cool and how you can stay cool for a lot less money than what it costs, because that's the hardest thing to do, is to stay cool in a hot climate. It's not great to stay warm in a cold climate, but it's much worse to stay cool in a hot climate in terms of cost, because of pumping issues and the engineering involved and the drag on moving things from one place to another as far as heat is concerned. It's easier to create energy in a confined space and warm up than it is to get the energy out of a confined space where the outside is hotter than the inside. Then you got a real problem. That's called pumping losses, and you have a lot of energy losses that are entailed. But we have solutions for that, we being the people I'm associated with. And I can help you, we can help you, with solutions that can save a good deal, as much as half or more, of the energy that is expended on staying cool And especially, it's even easier to stay warm. So if you do live in Canada or Alaska or someplace, and I don't care, maybe you live in the South Pole, that would be a problem. But wherever you are, there is a way to handle the situation in a way that is economically feasible, where the amount that you pay is less than the amount that you save. You save more in dollars and cents than it costs you to do these things. Okay, I'm serious now. A lot of you say, oh, yeah, I heard that before. No, this is for real. I'm not kidding you. I'm not just selling you a bill of goods. This is for real. So you can do that. And then you can say, well, why isn't everybody doing it then? Well, because of consciousness. Remember I told you at the beginning of the show, consciousness, that's our problem right now. People aren't conscious of what I'm trying to explain. They don't understand it. And that's what I'm trying to help. Okay, how simple are these things? Very. Can anybody do them? Well, some of them, yes, and some you can afford to hire somebody to help you with the rest, and it still pays you back. That's what we're talking about. Okay, then what else? What are the other things? Well, planning has a lot to do with this. When most people are going to get something, they seldom recognize the energy involved in the process and the time. Try to confine your purchasing of things to a certain segment of time, a concentrated segment of time, when there is little traffic, if you're using a vehicle, and when you can get the most amount for the least amount of time and energy expended. Use, if you can, the most efficient means of transportation when going places. A lot of people will take a giant SUV to go 3 miles and back again to a grocery store to get a few pieces of fruit or something. Well, that doesn't make much sense. First of all, plan buying everything at one time if you can and make trips consecutively that fit in. And also, maybe if you have another vehicle, take the vehicle that uses the least amount of fuel. Oh, it may not be as convenient or as much, you know, comfort. But if you're only going a few miles, it isn't going to make that much difference. And if you can walk or ride a bicycle, that will work too. If you have a two-wheeled, you know, like a little scooter or whatever, and it can hold enough for you to do something meaningful with it, use that. But whatever you do, remember this. It's your planning that makes as much difference as anything else. If you don't think about these things, if you aren't willing to put out the time and energy to think about them, you're not going to come up with very many ways of saving because planning is required. And the same is true about using time-of-use plans that some places have for electric use, more and more, by the way. If you can regulate your life in ways that make sense to you around that time-of-use plan, do it. But think about it. You have to come up with something that will work for your particular plan and lifestyle. And it means usually a number of people are involved because it's usually a family. You may have to install a different thermostat that you can control the time of when things go on and off. One of the things that I found is if your house is extremely well insulated, you can run your heating or cooling during the off-peak hours. Warm things up or cool things down. Now, this is, of course, where I'm at. It's cooling them down is what's critical. And we start walking around with coats on because we get it pretty cold. And then we turn it off. And we turn it off, like, so right now, someone should be putting on the refrigeration in the place I'm at right now because it just turned on the top of the hour. And we just went off of a high power usage and we're going to low power. And that allows us to go the entire afternoon. It's amazing. the entire afternoon without turning on the refrigeration unit, which would cool down the house. Isn't that amazing? And we have managed to do this without really suffering in any significant way. Oh, the last half an hour or so, right before, and it gets a little warmer in the house than some people might care to feel. You know, and a half an hour before we turn off everything, it's pretty cool. People are walking around like sweaters. So whatever, there's my sweater. It's cold in here because we get it pretty cold. Yeah, that's pretty extreme, and not everybody may choose to do that. But it saves an awful lot. And, of course, the power companies like that because they don't have to build in 50% to 100% more infrastructure to be able to handle the peak loads as much. That's where most of their cost is. Their cost is almost double because of peak loading. So if they can get people to use the energy earlier or later from the time when it's the most peak, then they are ahead of the game. They do that, of course, by pricing. But it also, that pricing pays for that extra infrastructure that they wouldn't have to buy if everybody was doing this. If you can do some modification of what I just said, that's fine. Not everybody goes to those extremes that I just suggested. But the point is that, again, this is really something where you look at your whole lifestyle and you choose how you're going to make some changes in it that will change the use of energy. It does work. There's some things that just don't take virtually any thought at all. Change your shower heads from 5 or 6 gallons a minute to 2 to 2.5. That saves a lot of your hot water, and hot water is where a lot of the energy is going. And even if you have a solar hot water system, you'd be surprised that 1/3 of your energy is still supplied by your electric system or more. And it's important also to recognize you're conserving some water, and water is difficult. It's a difficult problem. It's another thing. Remember the desertification issue? Well, we're running out of clean, fresh water. There's water. There's just as many molecules of water on this planet as there used to be, but most of it is too salty or contaminated and no longer useful for humans. It's most unfortunate. And so, and also, if you do have a need for a new toilet, toilets are gotten very efficient. They have a double flush system that flushes, if there's no solid mass, it just flushes like with less than a gallon of water. And then if there's, you know, solid mass in there, well, then it uses a bit more water. That's a pretty smart toilet. Some of them are going to start singing to you when you sit on them, too, but I don't think they have those available yet. But they're getting there. Anything, serenade, you know, anything to get you to conserve. And by the way, the plumbing industry has actually come a lot further than the electric industry has. I mean, it's kind of strange because the electric industry is so much more complex. You would think there's so many different ways to save there. We lose 25% of our energy in just our electric lines, getting the energy to and from your home, or to your home. That's from, too, but most people don't know that. It costs at least 25% of all the energy that's produced. And we could do something about that, too, but that's another day, and that would take a national effort. And I don't think we're going to be anywhere near able to do that for a while, simply because we're broke. We're spending ourselves into oblivion. And it's on senseless, stupid things. Ridiculous things. Okay, I'm going to take a little bit of a time here to go over some things with you. I just want to let you know, for those of you who have been, I know we've had some contact with people who are very interested in this quote-unquote pain formula stuff I've been working in. We're going to be doing some testing on it in the next few weeks. And so far, I've done some preliminary stuff. Yeah, I formulated it, but there's a whole company of people that are working with it. And it is amazing. That's all I can tell you. Complicated a little bit. I mean, in terms of our side of the fence, it's a lot more complicated than your typical pain pill. But in terms of the way it works, I want to let you know preliminarily, it lasts, give or take, about 8 hours, 6 to 8, we'll call it, but about 8 hours, which is better than most pain remedies are. And it relieves pain to a level I don't think most people are used to. It just gets plain rid of it. And when I say rid of it, you just don't feel pain, but you don't feel drugged. You don't feel, like, tired or sleepy or whatever. It just, pain just goes away. And it doesn't seem to matter what kind of pain. It seems to work on a whole variety of pains. So that's good. And it's a dietary supplement, yes, of some sorts. And it doesn't have anything in it that isn't natural. And it's not a drug. Can't, as far as I know, there's no way to get addicted to it unless you just like, you know, like taking pills. Because there's nothing in it that you can get addicted to. And it doesn't give you a high. You know, you don't feel like, oh, well, in the world. It just gets rid of the pain. And you can take any number of these capsules, depending upon how much pain you feel. You feel more, you can take a lot of them, or if you feel little, you can take a little of them. And that's a neat thing about it. It isn't like your typical pain pill, which is usually either too strong or too weak. It just never seems to fit whatever's going on. And this stuff you can titrate, it's the word, yourself. You can use the exact amount that you want to use and no more. And it isn't that much money. It's more expensive than aspirin or Tylenol, especially if you buy the brand names of those. And but it's just way better than any of that stuff. And it's more accessible than some of the really strong pain medications, which are quite dangerous and which are sold by prescription and oftentimes by controlled prescription or controlled substances because they're highly addictive and dangerous. But it's as strong or stronger than some of those. And that's the thing that's really amazing about it. We're calling it Freedom from Pain. That's going to be its name, Freedom from Pain, and officially will be its name. And it will be, I think, available in about a month or so, at least in a preliminary a batch, we'll say. Hopefully, we're going to be able to get it made in large enough quantities, assuming it's going to be as popular as I think it might be, so that we won't run out of it. But I do want to tell you, this stuff really works. Some people have tried it who don't find much relief from anything else. And they are saying, wow. And if you haven't heard about ideal cell sorption resveratrol, that's the type of resveratrol that we directly produce. We don't make the resveratrol per se, although we were going to be involved in some of that. But we make this product from it. And we use the very best, and we make it so that it actually is assimilable, which most resveratrol products are not. You're just wasting your time and money with them. And this stuff really, really works. I mean, it helps you to feel younger and work, you know, and do many things that you think you can't do if you're getting on in age. And there's even a product of same name, Ideal Cell Sorption Resveratrol VF, veterinary formula, for your dogs and cats. Yeah. Now, I don't know. If you've got some monkeys or squirrels or whatever, we haven't tested on that, so I don't know if it's going to work on them. It probably will, but I won't guarantee that. But what this stuff does is it just makes them younger, and they look younger, and they act younger. And that's important. For some of us, you know, who have pets, we want our pets to live as long as we can have them live comfortably and feel good. And we want that. So if you're interested in this product, you can call foreveryoungproducts.com at 800-777-7850 and pick up some of that stuff. And if you haven't heard about Soul Balance, you should get some of that. It's now been even further enhanced. We keep enhancing it, making it stronger. And you can get it if you have any kind of imbalances within your chakras. I talked about this, of course, last week. and you think that this might be of some help to you, it can make a tremendous difference in curing illnesses you normally can't and that kind of stuff. Although we don't sell it that we cure illnesses, but I can say it on the radio. I can say anything I want until they come and get me. But, you know, I'm telling you that really this stuff works. I've seen it do amazing things over and over again, hundreds, possibly into the thousands of times now. I mean, a lot of people have used this stuff. And for information, you can call 602-472-5127. That's Life Balance Association. And you can get the information from them about how to get this. If you want to get a hold of me, email me at thoughts@whylifeis.com. And check out our website, agelesswisdom.com. Okay, we're back again talking about how to conserve energy. And one of the elements that I talked about on when I went through all the how-tos was just thinking about the simplest things about your vehicles. Keep your tires filled to the maximum capacity that the manufacturer says is safe to use, which is usually the number that's right on the tire. Don't listen to other people about that because they're goofy people out there. Went to one place that told me, well, we never put more than 35 pounds in the tire because they'll blow up if you put more in, and we won't take the liability. The liability? Even when the tire says put in 44 or 51 pounds? The more air you put in the tires, the less rolling resistance and less heat that is built up in the tire. And instead of air, use nitrogen. Now, there's some places that you can go that use nitrogen all the time. Costco, if you buy tires at Costco, does. There are other places that you may be able to pay some amount of money for to get nitrogen put in your tires. Why nitrogen? You get about 10%, give or take, better gas mileage. And at the same time, the tire lasts twice as long because it has less rolling resistance and less heat, so the tread doesn't wear out. The whole tire doesn't wear out as much. 10% by filling your tires with nitrogen, and another 3 or 4% minimum, up to 10%, depending upon how much air you're putting, or how much nitrogen, air or nitrogen, you're putting in your tires. If you go to the max, you could get as much as 20% better fuel mileage, especially if you keep your tires down at 30 and they can go to 51. By going to 51 and putting nitrogen in them, you're going to get about 20% better gas mileage. Depends on your vehicle and also how much weight you keep in the vehicle. The more weight, the more important it becomes. If you transport more people, which is a good thing to do because more people using one vehicle is more efficient, more conserving, but then you got to make sure your tires are filled. Because if they're not, you're going to wear them out, and their car is not going to handle as well, and they use a lot more fuel. Now, one caveat, the car's going to ride a little harder. Be aware of that. It's not going to be quite as cushy and comfortable. It's a minor thing. Just go a little slower over big bumps. And be aware that it's just not going to be as quite as smooth as it was. But it does, in terms of rolling resistance, go a lot further. You take your foot off the gas, you can just, it just feels like it's gliding. So you can tell there's a difference with this. Another thing I would say is that there's a thing called pulsar spark plugs. And we're going to be distributing these in this particular area. But wherever you are, try these spark plugs out. If you're using a car that has a gasoline engine which uses spark plugs, these spark plugs will make about a 10% difference in fuel economy just by changing them. Be careful when you put them in because they are a little more fragile than the average spark plug. They aren't really spark plugs. They work a little bit on a different principle than the way a spark plug does, but they are amazing, and they will last a long, long time, about 100,000 miles. So you may only be putting them one time in your vehicle. The difference is remarkable in gas mileage. 10% for just changing out the spark plugs. And it's pretty consistent across the board. You're going to notice it right away. Better yet, why not put nitrogen in it at maximum pressure while you change out the plugs? and go to a more efficient air filter, a K&N air filter. That's the kind we've been using. You don't have to buy new filters. You just clean these, but they seem to work better, and you'll pick up a few percent better gas mileage with that. And then there's a bunch of additives. I've talked about these one time before, but we recently developed an additive ourselves that we're using just in our vehicles. We're so busy, I know, putting it up on the internet or somehow allowing people to buy it because it is incredible. There used to be a product, an additive that you can put in a car called molybdenum. It's a big word, disulfide, that you would use as an additive into an engine. Now, what does it do compared to Slick 50 and all those other things? Because we use those, by the way, too. Slick 50, Prolong, those are good products. They really actually add a little bit of gas mileage, but they make the engine last longer and run smoother. The thing I like about molybdenum disulfide is that it fills all the little microscopic scars and holes inside an aluminum or iron engine. And it does so just within a few minutes of adding it, although it works better over a couple hundred miles. And you can feel the difference, and it doesn't cost very much in relative terms. But unfortunately, because molybdenum has become expensive to mine, it's hard to find and it's become more difficult. The products that they used to sell for $5 when I was young went up to like 25 and 30. And finally, you didn't see them in the stores anymore because nobody was buying them. So we have a source for getting the raw product, and we put it in a solution, and it really works extremely well. So I can recommend to you that you try molybdenum disulfide if you can find any. If you can't, then give us a ring or email us, and maybe we'll get off our duff, I know, and we'll actually produce them. It isn't that hard to produce it. It's just that we are so busy. If we had a couple of more hands helping us do stuff, we could do a lot of stuff to help people. Now, does it save gas? Yeah. Just the molybdenum alone saves about 5% or so if you put it into a car. That's what I've seen. So if you did nothing else, you just put molybdenum in, you'd save about 5%. I think you'll get about 10% if you add a little Prolong engine treatment along with some Slick 50. So, and that's another 10%. I mean, you start adding up these percents before long, you're going to have to start taking the gas out of the tank, because you're going to be using no gas. No, I'm kidding, of course. But the point is that it is effective. I'm telling you, this stuff really works. And if you carry a lot of junk in your trunk, you know, like heavy objects or something, take it out, because all that, every pound you put into a car takes away your gas mileage. Some people don't know that. It's just simple physics. But, I've seen people open their trunks and they have super heavy things in their trunks. It's kind of crazy. First of all, it affects the handling. It could actually cause an accident. But the other thing is that it really cuts into your gas mileage. It wears out your rear tires. I mean, it's not good. So if you are carrying something around that you've had there for like 6 months or a year, you're going to take it out as soon as you got home, but you left it there, get it out, because heavy stuff in the trunk is particularly detrimental, or any place on the car. I mean, some people carry stuff on the roof of the car and they don't take it down. That's bad because of air resistance and weight. Between the two of those things, it'll eat up some of your mileage, particularly in high speeds. So these are the kinds of things that you might want to look at in terms of your transportation needs and see if it's going to be helpful to do the things I'm saying. They don't cost much money. The things that, it's so amazing. I know some people say, well, I heard about the putting more air in your tires. Yeah, but you didn't hear about all the other stuff. And there's a lot more you can do. But just the things that I mentioned can improve 30-40% your fuel mileage. And that could offset what seems to be coming down the pike. And that's much higher gasoline prices. Not this summer, but next year. Yeah. So be aware that we're headed in a direction where conservation is based upon consciousness and it's a spiritual principle. And if we don't conserve, we're going to lose our freedom. That's the ultimate end of the process, because there are dark ones out there that want to take the freedom away from us. And they'll use the economy as a means to do that. It's also important to think about this. I know some people at the present time are having trouble finding a job or finding some means of gainful employment. Now, if you have any abilities at all, maybe to change plugs or maybe to do some of the things I'm talking about, you might want to think about that as a small business. Now, this administration, the present administration, is anti-small business, but you can still make a living if you keep things conservative. If you conserve everything you do and spend very little money, but are willing to work hard and work smart and plan, you can make a business work. And so if you are presently out of work, and I know people in California, the state next to us, the 12.5% to 13% unemployment depends upon the area. Some areas are suffering under 15% and 16%. Now, I know a number of people from California are listening to this. Think about a small business and something that involves conservation. One of the things about California, by the way, is at least as a state, although it's going broke or has gone broke, it's very pro-conservation. So you should look into that and see what you can do to be of some help. And it would be more than just a business, because then you would be also helping your family, your friends, everybody. And you'd be helping yourself to begin with. I mean, the first place to start is right at home. Do everything you can to conserve, and then see what your forte is. There are some window films that are amazingly effective at lowering electric bills just by cutting out most of the solar gain. Did you know that? You probably didn't. Some kinds of films can actually increase substantially the U value, which is like the resistance to energy moving through the window. Not just the sun blocking, but also the it's like putting an extra pane of glass in the window with an air barrier, which is the film. That's amazing stuff. This is the sort of thing that we all can get into and do. And the stuff you can't do, find somebody who can, and maybe help them build their business by you being a customer of them. You see, this is, instead of going to a movie, which might cost $25 before long, per person, do something in your house that makes it more livable and less expensive and conserves energy. It's certainly possible in this day and age to do a very minimal amount and conserve 20 to 30% of the energy. Going a little bit further than that, you can get up to 50%. And I'm not kidding you. And I'm talking about all the energy you use now in every way possible. The lifestyle changes can be enjoyable because you're creative. Each process is going to be a creative one where you can learn something, you can work together with others, maybe collectively work in a neighborhood. Go up and down the block and say, "Yeah, listen to this crazy guy on the radio tonight. Let's all conserve energy. I'll help you if you help me. I know a little bit about this. Maybe somebody else knows something else. We'll work together," because a lot of these are two or three or four or five person jobs. You can't do them alone as efficiently. There are so many things. There's so many ways. And remember, it's really the way of God. Waste not, have not. If we are truly looking at this process, God is a conservationist. Almost nothing in nature goes to waste. Have you thought about that? I know there's a lot of people who say, "Oh, conservation is invented by people who are kooks, you know, they run around with funny hats and things and look weird." No. Because if you look at nature, go out and just look at how everything is used. Everything is used in the most efficient way, because there's things called group souls that actually there's an intelligence. It's not all evolution. There's an intelligence plan, okay? Nothing is wasted. Nothing is wasted. I say that with, you know, reverence, because if we could be as efficient as nature or God is efficient, we would have no problems right now. We're not even close to as efficient as the lower kingdoms are. So this is what our goal should be, is to reach that kind of level of efficiency so that we can say to ourselves, now I am co-participating with my Creator. That's what spiritual life is about. The thought of our Creator becomes our thought. Not that we are following it. We are co-creating in it. And we're using this thought to make a better world. Eventually, it may be 100 or 200 or some odd years from now, humans will make an environment that is more conservative than the environment that God created. Because we are here to ultimately improve upon it. I know that sounds to some people like blasphemy. It's not. That's my understanding of what God is. God is a being who wants others to grow and become as great as they can be and choose to be. That's my God. May not be yours, but that's mine. And as such, we have the opportunity to emulate this. It may take us centuries to become as efficient as this Creator has shown itself to be. But we can certainly start moving in that direction right now. I hope this show has been encouraging. There's so much more I could have gotten into. But the most important thing is that we realize right now that we have to do this now. I know in the past I've said, and I said this a few years ago when I was on KXAM, and it's a broadcast radio station in Phoenix, that, oh, we might have a few years. I honestly said that. I think I said that in 06, 07. And so we can gradually get into this. I don't even think we have a few months. I'm telling you, we've run out of time. There are so many things that are moving against us right now. Conservation has got to become a way of life, or we're going to lose the way of life that we appreciate and love and have loved. And we're going to lose our freedoms, and it's going to be a nightmare. I hope that doesn't happen. I hope you all take to heart the things I've said and share this with others. Tell people about this show. Remember, it's online. They can go and listen to it. After a few days, it's up there, and anybody else that you know can listen to it. And refer them to other shows that you thought were important. Say, well, I heard this guy, and you can go and listen to it. If you think you're hearing things that are important, let other people know about it. There is no more time. We need to communicate and be a voice. Be a voice in November and vote. Do the things that make a difference. Because there's no greater time, no better time, no more important time than right now. I hope this has all made sense to you. It has to me, of course, but I hope it has made some to you so that your consciousness is expanded, and that will cause you to be a much wiser conservationist in the future. Until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.